The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
Happy Father's Day. I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his adopted father, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 75 of The Big Picture for the week beginning September 4. And coming up on today's show, well, it is the Big Daddy Show of the Year, our Happy Father's Day special.
In which we'll be appearing Mad Max and Lord of the Rings Aragorn because there are new releases at cinemas about very different parenting styles.
And Ben also announces the top five movie dads he wishes were his dad, with no actual disrespect meant for his father.
No disrespect to my dad. Happy Father's Day. Day again. Dad, happy Father's Day to you. Mark, how's your day been?
Happy Father's Day to you. I have got lots of plastic and glue and things stuck together. I was woken up this morning with things that probably should be, well, you know, tastefully disposed of, but I'm going to put them on a shelf for a while.
Okay, that's enough about you. Here's also what's going on this week, and not necessarily dad-related. At cinemas, opening this week, The Infiltrator, which is a movie I thought would have made more noise based on who's in it. Bryan Cranston, actor now most famous for Breaking Bad, and is based on a true story of him playing a US customs official who uncovers a money laundering scheme involving Colombian drug lord Pablo Escobar.
Seems to have everything.
All of those factors, and yet there hasn't really been much noise about it. The Infiltrator is out at the moment. It does seem like Bryan Cranston, in comparison with Breaking Bad, is now on the other side of the drug trade. But beyond that, I'm not hearing much else that's enticing me along the way. But I plan to check it out in the next couple of weeks.
Here's something to entice you.
Yes.
Da, 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 da. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I think you were trying to do Sesame Street.
I was doing Sesame Street. Thank you very much. Sesame Street, the 1969 season one, has been released online on Presto.
Great.
You can actually now download on Presto all 130 episodes of this beloved children's classic.
Show.
I know, but you can see the originals. My wife is thrilled, basically. It's first aired in 1969 with Oscar the Grouch and Big Bird as the only Muppets, okay? But eventually Muppets, as you know, just take over the whole Sesame Street approach. So you can go back and see the original stuff. You know, a 1996 survey found that 95% of all American preschoolers had watched the show by the time they were 3 years old. 95%.
And this Australian preschooler over here, also at cinemas this week, Mark, is a film called Nerve, which again, like The Infiltrator, haven't heard too much about, haven't really investigated too much, but it does seem like a movie for now. It's about a high school senior student who finds herself immersed in some online game of truth or dare, where her every move starts to become a manipulated game by an anonymous community of watchers.
It's the danger of apps.
Apps
are out to get us.
They are, apparently, in Nerve, which stars Emma Roberts, who is Julia Roberts' niece, and Dave Franco, who is James Franco's brother. It's a movie of siblings and nieces. Nerve at cinemas now.
Okay. Well, listen, there is a plethora of diet-related programs in the UK and Australia, and they're basically clogging up the pores of our remote controls currently. Well, The Biggest Loser, How the Other Half Eat, The World's Best Diet, Health Food Junkies, and my personal favourite, Weighing Up the Enemy, just to name a few. That's an actual show.
Right.
But there's a hidden gem tucked away on Channel 7 at 11:10 p.m. So I'm telling you,
prime time.
11:10 on Channel 7, the 7 Network on Thursday nights. How to Lose Weight Well. Not only does it sound sensible, but it's actually hosted by, wait for it, a doctor. It's somebody who actually knows what
sensible
they're talking
medical
about.
Advice
now,
on a weight loss show.
Here's my best
Great.
Go at their name. Dr. Zand Van Tulliken and a dietitian nutritionist, Hala El Shafi. Each week, they ask volunteer dieters to try out some of the most popular and talked about diets on the market and give the lowdown on how they actually perform. So they're getting people to try out the stuff that we're all excited and apparently supposed to be rushing out to do and then see if they work. This program is great for anyone who ever thought that just eating cabbage for 30 days would actually work.
Before we get to our first Now Showing choice for this special Father's Day edition of The Big Picture, we're going to be talking about Captain Fantastic very soon. A bit of entertainment news. The first trailer's been released for Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk. Christopher Nolan, of course, would be known to everybody, you presume, who's ever seen the Dark Knight trilogy or Interstellar or Inception. One of the biggest directors around. But this is something very different from him. The film opens as hundreds of thousands of British and Allied troops are surrounded by enemy forces. They're trapped on a beach with their backs to the sea. So they face an impossible situation as the enemy closes in Dunkirk. The trailer's not very long, doesn't reveal too much. It's just very atmospheric and soldiers basically waiting for an attack to come. And it does feature Tom Hardy and Mark Rylance and Cillian Murphy in the cast, and expect to see it next July in cinemas.
I can't believe they've taken so long to do this. Dunkirk, the greatest historical escape of an army. And it's going to be great.
You've said it, and it sounds like Christopher Nolan agrees with you.
Looking forward to it. Okay, and exciting news too in entertainment news for Wreck-It Ralph fans. Wreck-It Ralph 2 is coming to cinemas in 2018, this time to wreck the internet. The first Wreck-It Ralph was a smash hit, telling the story of an arcade villain who turned against his role and dreams of becoming a hero instead. Well, details of the sequel are still under wraps, but both John C. Reilly, who voiced Ralph, and Sarah Silverman as Vanellope von Schwietz are confirmed to return.
Great, mate. Now, I believe you've got a true or false statement for us to work out whether it's true or false.
Well, let me hit you up with our Father's Day special, True or False.
Righto.
With one of the greatest Father's Day films of all time, The Godfather. There you go.
Yes.
Not just because dads like to quote it, leave the gun, take the cannoli, but because it's a great Father's Day fact. As much loved as this film is, protesters surrounded the cinema during its release because of a gangster prop. True or false?
Because of a gangster prop.
A
prop in the movie.
Just because of a prop in the movie.
Okay.
Protesters surrounded cinemas on its release.
I need to mull that over because I've not heard anything like that kind of story about The Godfather. So we'll get back to it after we talk about... What are we going to talk about, Mark?
Well, it's first off for now showing Captain Fantastic. How many times have you threatened to reject society, run away from it all, and raise your family the way you want to raise them without outside influence? At least once. In my life. But Ben has done just that. Not this Ben.
Not me, no.
No, but Ben, the father of six, played by the Lord of the Rings star Viggo Mortensen. You might know him better as Aragorn, in the new indie drama Captain Fantastic. Our Ben spent time with Captain Fantastic's radical parenting model, and he discovered a renegade dad who can't see how similar he is to the things he fights against.
This is your fault.
Leslie had a disease.
Wherever you are, stay there. You show up, I will have you arrested.
We can't go to Mommy's funeral. We have to do what we're told.
We want to see Mom. Grandpa can't oppress us.
Some sailor.
Right now, this is your first real test. Remember your training.
They have hot dogs.
What's cola?
Poison water.
Let's see who can work it.
Mark, so Captain Fantastic does star Viggo Mortensen as Ben. He's a dad of six, and they live somewhere in Northwest America in a forest. You're never told the exact location. And part of that is intentional because Ben has decided to take his kids out of society and then is basically training them up to be philosophical, intellectual, and physical warriors against Western society. So all the things that Western society can throw at a family and at kids and just individuals within that society, he's basically thrown off the majority of those things and is trying to exist in a forest, raising his family the way he wants to raise them.
Wow. I mean, it's like superhero philosophers.
Yeah, okay. Kind of. Man, these kids are super fit and they're really young, but they run up mountains and stuff, as well as read everything from, you know, Nietzsche and Mein Kampf to modern economic textbooks for their homework.
This sounds like an extreme version of homeschooling.
Yeah, mate, it is.
On steroids.
It is. Look, last week you talked about Free State of Jones on the show. Go to thebigpicturewebsite.com, check out Mark's review, where there's a guy fighting the power of society around him. And that's what you get here with Ben. He's the same kind of bloke, but he's so against all the values and systems that he's up against. He goes off the grid so far and trying to raise his kids in this particular way that it is extreme to the point of you've got to question whether it's too extreme.
He becomes basically an example of the very thing he's trying to fight against.
Yeah. Like, I'll get onto that a little bit later, but I think audiences are going to struggle with Ben. They're going to struggle.
He's not likable enough. Even though you might admire his goal, he's just not.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, are you going to love him or are you going to loathe him? And Ben, as Captain Fantastic, like that name pops up, he doesn't really style himself as a superhero or anything like that. But he is this central focus while his kids are around him. And what happens across the rest of the story is an event happens that basically takes them out of where they are. And they've then got to go and effectively kind of confront or drive through society to get and meet some relatives. And then a lot of collisions of parenting styles happen at that point. So you're with Ben and the kids for a long way. Will you love or you loathe Ben? It depends on how you take what he's doing. Because on the plus side, he makes strong and clear and fair points about what he's railing against. I think a lot of people moan about the way things are and they complain that society's like this or government's like this or religion's like this or whatever it is. They don't do anything about it. And they don't even have a philosophy or an idea that they present is better. But Ben suggests that he does. So that's quite a positive, and I think there's something to be said for that as a parent and as a dad watching this guy do what he's trying to do for his kids. On the negative, the kids are in this tense situation where they clearly love their dad and they admire their dad and they respect their dad, but the way he is instructing them about the world is effectively turning them into freaks of society, because they do have interaction with outside society and they have it increasingly across the rest of the film. And so it becomes a massive issue of, is he raising his children for the world or is he just raising them for himself?
Wow. I mean, he sounds a bit muddled, but is the film trying to make homeschooling or getting off the grid or withdrawing from society a positive thing?
I don't think so. It definitely falls more on the side of, it's not advocating Ben's position, but it's definitely a fan, or at least it's not shooting it down entirely. But like the character of Ben, and Viggo Mortensen does a great job. Like, he really inhabits this guy well, gives him the sort of thinking and gravitas you'd expect of a guy who's doing this. So they present him strongly, but they also critique as well. And towards the end of the film, you get a very strong collision between Ben's philosophy on life and Christianity. As much as throughout the film, Ben and his children claim that they're sort of not mocking, they're not trying to attack other people, but they do tear down other people's philosophies, and in particular, Christianity really comes in for it. But one of the things I found fascinating about Captain Fantastic is that Ben, the central character, seems oblivious to what we as the audience can recognize in him or should be able to, which is he's doing exactly the same thing to his children that he claims society is doing to kids, and that's bad.
He's indoctrinating.
Yeah, that's a strong word, but I don't think it's unfair of what he's trying to do to his children. So as much as Christianity and plenty of other religious and social philosophies come in for a battering, one of the questions I walked out with, but is Ben actually better? Is he presenting a better model? Should you withdraw from the world and treat your kids like this? I don't think Captain Fantastic makes that case strongly. I don't think it's even trying to, but it does raise that very strong issue that if you did want to remove yourself from society, come up with a new way of thinking, or think that you should throw off everything that's come before you, are you just going to replace it with exactly the same system that you say that you hate? Captain Fantastic raises all that. An excellent drama in my books, and go check it out.
Okay, well, there's one for the thinking crowd. Captain Fantastic is rated M for mature films. Sorry, for mature themes. Coarse language.
It is a mature film.
And there's a bit of nudity in there as well. It's on less than widespread release. Yes, it's actually off the grid. The film itself is being released off the grid. And stars Viggo Mortensen, Frank Langella, George Mackay, and young Australian talent Nicholas Hamilton.
He is really good as one of the kids in this film. Nicholas Hamilton, watch that kid. He's going to go big places very soon.
Well, a little earlier in the break, we posed a true or false for you, and in fact for Ben specifically, about The Godfather. Did activists surround the cinemas when it was released because of a prop? True or false?
I want to say no, because they protested something else.
Oh, actually, you're wrong. It's true. They did. Animal rights activists protested the horse's head scene. The fact that there was a severed horse's head in the film upset animal activists, so they went, right, that's it, we're taking it to the streets, and they surrounded the cinemas. Francis Ford Coppola told Variety, the magazine, there were many people killed in that movie, but everyone worries about the horse. It was the same on the set. When the head arrived, it upset many crew members who are animal lovers, who like little doggies. What they didn't know is that we got the head from a pet food manufacturer who slaughters 200 horses a day to feed those little doggies. Well made point, Francis Ford Coppola.
Whoa. And on that note, still to come on this Happy Father's Day edition of The Big Picture.
Happy Father's Day in your horse's head.
Yeah, Mad Max is back. I'm also going to unveil the top five movie dads I wish were my dad, but no disrespect to my actual dad, and Stranger Things. Welcome back to The Big Picture. Now, before the break, we had a look at this new now showing release, Captain Fantastic, where a guy takes homeschooling to the limits in an attempt to instill morals in his kids. Of course, that's a pretty extreme case, going off the grid to construct some fairly off-the-wall lessons for kids. So, we figured that homeschooling deserved a right of reply, which is exactly what Mark went looking for this week for our press record segment, when he talked to one mum who decided to take her kids' schooling very seriously at home.
Julie, thanks very much for talking to us. Captain Fantastic gives a really strange view of homeschooling. When you first thought about doing homeschooling for your family, were you apprehensive or did you have some worries yourself?
I don't know where I got my impression of homeschooling from, but I came into it with a very odd impression of what homeschoolers were like. I had this very organic feel to what homeschoolers were like. So I imagined that they made their own clothes and grew their own food and had these beautiful, well-behaved children. And so the very first time I went to a group event, I was delighted to turn up with my two boys at the time, and we had our little packed lunch of white bread sandwiches with peanut butter and Nutella, because that was the only thing I could get them to eat at the time. And I was expecting all these other families to have all this, you know, beautiful homegrown food and everything.
Mung beans and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, yes, all that. And one of the families rushed in late with five kids in tow, mum screaming at them all, and bags of McDonald's. So that put me right at ease. I felt, oh, yes, I can fit into this scenario. Yeah.
Now, you have both homeschooled and not homeschooled. You had four boys. Can you tell us, for a start, what did you see as the advantages of homeschooling and why did you go in that way?
I've had a foot in each camp. I've gone both home education, public schooling and private schooling now. Some of the main advantages that I saw with home education was the ability to be able to cater the learning to the individual child. So I could work with my boys' strengths and their particular learning styles and cater the learning to that. We could go at their own pace. So in some subject areas where they did really well, we were able to go very fast. Other subject areas that they needed a little bit more work, we could slow down and take our time and just do it at their own pace. Another thing that I really enjoyed was being able to chase rabbit trails. So kids with their learning, they get an idea about something and they want to explore it more. And in the school system, you're very much restricted by time to just cover things at very much a surface level. Another really, really big one was just being able to experience learning more deeply. So rather than learning about something from a book, we were able to go and have hands-on learning. So whether that might be, you know, we were doing a topic on Egypt and you can duck down to the museum and have a look at the Egyptian part of the museum.
And no forms to fill in.
No forms to fill in, exactly.
So I'm going to throw the question that every parent out there who's listening to this is thinking, you've worked as a mum and you're being a teacher as well. Did you ever feel overwhelmed?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of people say to me, oh, you know, I quite like the idea of homeschooling, but I could never do it. And my answer to that is you never know what you can do until you give it a try. And you just take one day at a time. When we first started, we decided that we'd just give it a go for 6 months and see how it worked out. You know, the public school was always going to be down the road. If it didn't work, they had to take them, basically. But yeah, each 6 months we would just reevaluate, and we just thrived as a family doing the home education. And each 6 months we decided, yep, we should keep going with this. And then it blew out to 7 years.
Now, you're a Christian. How did you see your Christianity playing out in homeschooling?
Probably one of the big things was just family relationships. So my bond with my younger two, who are the ones that I home educated, is very strong. We were doing life together, but also being able to impart a biblical worldview in every subject that we were tackling, and to know that my values, my Christian values, the morality from the Bible, all those things we were able to stitch into the learning and just make it really natural for them. I knew exactly what worldview they were being taught. They weren't having to discern from a patchwork of information that a variety of teachers were giving them. They were getting a very strong biblical foundational worldview.
Okay, people, it's a craze. It's officially a craze. If you haven't heard of the new cult TV series Stranger Things, well, you just need to walk outside, go next door, because chances are one of your neighbors has. Stranger Things is our choice for what your kids are watching this week, because this 80s-inspired childish adventure might leave you thinking that's an ET-inspired romp. That would be fine viewing for the whole family, but Mark tuned in to discover a much darker fantasy that certainly aims for the nostalgia of childhood, but is likely to remind you of a fair few childhood nightmares as well.
Do you really think it was a coincidence that we found her at the same place where Will disappeared? Something is going on here!
What the hell?
She knows about Will!
Is there any way that you could reach him?
Yes.
Nancy!
Go, go, go!
What if this whole time I've been looking for Will? I've been chasing after something else.
Oftentimes on the show, Mark, I feel like I'm just disgracing myself in public because I need to admit that I haven't seen certain things that loads of other people have, loads of other people are talking about. That could be an old movie from the 20s or something like Stranger Things, which has been a massive buzz now for the last 1 or 2 months internationally and in Australia. I thought this was a real throwback to the 80s adventure that families might want to watch together. That's the understanding I'm going to have from it. Is that right?
Yeah, you'd be forgiven for thinking so. I mean, because in terms of its structure, the program looks a lot like E.T. or The Goonies or even J.J. Abrams' Super 8, which is really just a throwback to those two. A bunch of kids involved in a mystery, racing around, trying to find out what a devilish government department is trying to hide, and a few parents involved on the side too. So basically, Stranger Things has this sort of shape. This boy, 12-year-old boy called Will Byers, vanishes mysteriously. His mother's frantic. Her name's Joyce. She's played by Winona Ryder. She searches
big star of the 80s, yeah, Winona Ryder.
There you go. I mean, while and police chief Jim Hopper, who's played by David Harbour, launches his investigation to try and find the child. In the meantime, you've got all his best friends, Dustin, Mike, and Lucas, forming their own little kid pact, and they discover a girl, a psychokinetic girl, who claims she knows Will's location. Her name's Elle, you know, short for 11 because she has 11 tattooed on her hand.
And so mysterious.
You've got this pack of little sort of kids in this dark little mystery running around.
So it sounds a little bit like The Goonies meets Stephen King or John Carpenter, one of the big directors back in the 80s. We should also point out Stranger Things is on Netflix. If you didn't know that, that's some reason like you've been living under a rock, say, for the last couple of months, because Stranger Things on Netflix has been massive. So we get back to this point of, but is it some sort of nostalgic romp for people like me who grew up in the 80s and would love to share this with their kids if they're old enough?
No. And in all honesty, don't be taken in. Look, I'm not saying it's not a good program. I'm just saying the reason why we raised it in what your kids are watching is you've got to be very careful because it looks like it's going to be E.T. and it looks like it's going to be Goonies, but it's actually going to be Supernatural. Okay, you know, something more
that TV series Supernatural.
Yeah, that TV series Supernatural is much darker. Or like The Lovely Bones, if you were trying to find a kid version. Yes, there's disappearing children. And
that Peter Jackson movie that came out a number of years ago.
Dark spiritual forces at work. I mean, this is much more like that than it is like anything you put your children in front of.
Right, okay.
In fact, evil is such a strong theme in this that I'd be very careful about the way evil is being presented.
Right, before I ask you more about the presence of evil in this, I'm curious about how it's handled on screen, but do you like the show?
Yeah, now weirdly, I've watched the entire series and I actually think it's great thrilling viewing, okay? It's great thrilling TV. It's got great performances. It's great to see Winona Ryder back on screen in a way that's actually really quite a compelling role for her. And it's good to see kids in a circumstance that's actually a little more realistic if these terrifying things were going on around them. But that, like I said, if you put your children in front of this, more like, you know, suspecting you're going to have a Goonies run, more likely you're going to have a whole series of nightmares to deal with.
Right. Now, is this like Kubo and the Two Strings, which you talked about on the show last week? You did a review of it. Go to thebigpicturewebsite.com to check out Mark's thoughts on Kubo and the Two Strings. But there was a lot of deep, intense adult themes going on in it, everything from death to grief to the supernatural. You've mentioned a bit that this is Supernatural and that evil is really quite somewhere towards the heart of the series. Where is the evil coming from? Like, what kind of universe is Stranger Things taking place in? Is it the one that we live in?
Yeah, no. Look, in this, I guess psychologically it is the universe we live in.
Yeah, because, set in our real world,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. But it's set in a real world, but also the way in which we perceive evil is very modern. Okay, so for a start, evil is external. So there's this alternate universe that we're going to keep dipping into. I don't want to give too much away because it's a thriller sort of mystery sort of series, but it is really the opposite of our world. If you like, our world is a good place and the plot intersects us with an evil place. So evil is external to us. That's the interesting thing to begin with. The second thing is that, you know, in essence, we come in contact with evil not because we've done something wrong, but because other people have done wrong things to us. These scientists have been mucking around with the laws of the universe in ways that they shouldn't be doing, and it's all their fault.
So someone's always to blame?
Yeah, but interestingly, rather than thinking that it's somebody else's fault, I actually found this to be an interesting parallel to a story we all really do know subconsciously, the whole Adam and Eve story, okay? That when people start messing around with things that they've been told they shouldn't mess around with, evil is the result. And that's the story in Stranger Things. When people start messing around, government departments or otherwise, with things that they shouldn't be messing around with, the result is always a mistake. And likewise, you know, in the Adam and Eve story, it's exactly the same thing. When Adam and Eve go that way,
do you think Stranger Things is somehow framed around the Adam and Eve story? Or like, is it any sort of deliberate echoes
to
it?
No, it's not deliberate, but actually it is. It is realistic to make that point. And the reason why I say so is because we're dealing with an archetype, okay? Stories have archetypes, these great big sort of like landmarks that come along that we all recognize because we understand how the story should go. In this case, this is the archetype of these things are somebody else greater than us. Responsibility. You don't muck around with the nature of the universe because we're small human beings. And that is the Christian story. And it is so true that it bleeds into even un-Christian productions. We shouldn't be mucking around with things that aren't our responsibility. We're not in control of the universe. Evil will only result from something like that.
Stranger Things is available anytime at Netflix, but you might want to just fire it up after the kids go to bed. It stars Winona Ryder, David Harbour, Matthew Modine, who also was fairly big in the 80s, and is rated adult. That's a rating? That's an actual rating on the streaming service?
It's really worth noting that it's very hard to get, with the whole proliferation of new streaming services, it's very hard to get accurate ratings. They don't share the same rating system. So Netflix calls this adult, and believe me, it is.
Be cautious about that. Still to come on the show, a Stranger Things soundtrack choice. Mel Gibson is back on the big screen, and there will be the top five movie dads I wish were my dad announced, and I'm still not in any way disrespecting my actual dad.
Welcome back to the show. Now, we've come up to our soundtrack segment. Stranger Things, as we were reviewing the last segment, if you had a chance to go back and have a look at it or listen to it on the podcast, don't forget the podcast is available on thebigpicturewebsite.com. Always worth your effort.
Which is so convenient because right now, that's right, you can just rewind us and get back to Stranger Things. But now we are at soundtrack.
And in soundtrack, Stranger Things has definitely had an impact on popular culture of late, as we've been saying, not only for its nostalgic references to the 80s, but also for its fantastic soundtrack, including classics like Jefferson Airplane and the undisputed punk like The Clash. All these sort of things are available on the show. Well, this has spawned a recent craze online in Stranger Things playlists popping up everywhere. And one of our favourite includes Words by F.R. David.
See, I love you, words don't
Now I know what you're thinking.
That was the 80s in one song.
Synthesizer, you know, from the 80s is very much like Chinese water torture. You know, okay. But that said, before you knock it off too much, F.R. David's Words was originally released only in France and Monaco, of all places, in 1981. And then we think, oh, you know, there's one of those sort of classic 80s sounds. Maybe it didn't do much than just pop up and pop down on the charts.
But it was big in Monaco?
You'd be wrong. It was huge all over Europe. Oh. In fact, it peaked at number one in dozens of countries. An incredible song. And it's kind of like one of that sort of moments of nostalgia that Stranger Things digs up. So enjoy the nostalgia with us. Don't come easy to me. How can I find? Mel Gibson is one of the biggest movie stars Australia has ever produced. We just need to remind you of that, because the outbursts and the outrages in his private life can be what so many of us remember about him now. Okay, but The Lethal Weapon and Mad Max Man is back in action drama Bloodfather. Fitting for our Father's Day special, Bloodfather has Gibson as a dad who'll do anything for his daughter by facing the consequences of her mistakes head on.
Missing link tattoo.
Dad.
I'm here.
I need cash fast.
Yes, I am dead.
Just stay put till I get there.
See, my boyfriend, he got shot. There are a lot of people looking for me.
How long you been doing this? Tell me the truth.
You found her.
She's coming down hard off something.
Get her into detox.
I just met the girl for the first time in years. I just don't feel like handing her over to a bunch of strangers.
Want that too?
I'm not open.
I'm so sorry.
It's good to meet your friends.
That's right, Mark. Mel Gibson is back in front of cameras. He's playing John in Bloodfather. And his daughter, Lydia, who is played by an actress called Erin Moriarty, who also is in Captain Fantastic as one of Captain Fantastic's kids. Here, she is John's estranged daughter. She comes back out of nowhere one night into the life of John. And she's being chased by a Mexican drug cartel. Now, that might sound bad, but John is a bloke who's kind of used to this sort of life, because he's been a hard-drinking, hard-living guy, spent a lot of time in prison. He's been out for a while. He's been sober for 2 years. He lives in a trailer park. He's a tattoo artist. So of all the dads that a daughter could come back and say, some guys are trying to kill me, he's the kind of bloke that you might want in your corner at that time. Bloodfather is directed by a French director called Jean-Francois Richet, whose name will not mean anything to anybody, but I think after Bloodfather, it's going to really ignite his career on an international stage, because Bloodfather is a cracker.
So it's not just an action movie. You're saying it's actually got heart with it as well?
I am going to say that, Mark. It's definitely violent and sweary, and it will punch you between the eyes as...
Well, that's what I look for.
As Mel Gibson's character just sort of explodes on the screen. But the film is lean and quick and smart about what it does. And what it does do very well is it doesn't just get into the storyline. It doesn't just go along in a believable reality, not in a movie fake universe. It does really feel like you're living in it. It doesn't just do all that. It gives you a relationship between a father and a daughter that is really credible. And particularly Mel Gibson's performance here as John is one of the best action man performances that I can think of, in terms of he's a guy who, yes, because of his background, it makes sense that he's this tough-talking hombre that can get the job done. Sadly, there are a few moments where it tips over into being a little bit too much like an action movie, you know, where you say things or you do things that only an action movie star would do. It doesn't do it very much. What it does do, and which is a real surprise, is, and Mel Gibson is excellent at this, there's a heart and a demonstration of an unconditional love pouring out of John in the midst of him and his daughter being chased down by a Mexican drug cartel.
Is that what you take away from it? You're a dad with a daughter. Is that what you're taking away from Bloodfather, or like some form of way of building your relationship?
I love how you phrase that, and I'm trying to think of like the accurate response, because the short answer is I never wish that my daughter Elodie will come home one day, knock on the door.
The bonding experience.
That's right. I should back up. Of course, you don't want to be in this nightmarish situation. No one would want this. But what Bloodfather does demonstrate is, even in these terrible times, there's this occasional joy of a relationship trying to be restored. And just what I do take from it, Mark, on the relationship front is, no matter what's happened in the past, John is very accepting of his daughter, but not to a fault. So he doesn't just excuse away everything that's happened.
So he's aware of her problems.
He's aware of her problems, all right, and he's aware of his own. And he lives by this sort of mantra of, you can't expect to live in a certain way and then try to live afterwards as if it didn't matter. So basically he's saying there are consequences for your actions and you're going to have to live with those. And he's a bloke who spent his whole life effectively or seemingly trying to face up to him. Actually, not his whole life. Since he got out and started reflecting on his life. And he brings that to bear on his daughter. So as much as Erin Moriarty is very good at this, at being the kind of the complaining teen, early 20s daughter who tries to pass the buck left, right and center, and he just refuses to hear that, at the same time as expressing and demonstrating a real love for his daughter that means he will protect her at any cost.
Okay, so they have this whole consequences of bad actions happening, inside of the plot. How do they handle it? I mean, what is the solution to all their bad actions?
Mate,
reload?
Like you'd expect, I don't think I'm giving away too much to say there's an inevitable sense of doom here. So as much as they're on the run and trying to flee, John talks a lot about facing up to consequences of actions. At the same time, he doesn't want his daughter to be killed. So they're on the run, and yet the noose is tightening constantly, and you get this very strong sense that like doom is imminent for this dad and this daughter. So they're heading off into that sunset rapidly, and no wonder the movie is so tense as you go along, because you actually feel something for these people, even though, as the movie keeps explaining, they've done these bad things and they're not even shying away from it, particularly John. This very interesting thing that he says, though, towards the end of the movie after Lydia confesses a crime to him, and he says, look, you are going to face God for that, and so will I. And what he seems to be referring to is all the past sins that he's committed, but not now. And what his statement, not now, seems to be suggesting is that he can pick and choose the moment of his daughter's death, or at least try to prevent that. But he also seems to be suggesting that what he just said about, yeah, you will face God, isn't actually true. What he seems to be saying is, and not now, and just in those couple of words, is, well, actually, as much as I think the idea of ultimate justice and ultimate judgment is probably true and is likely to come for all of us, but not now would strongly suggest that he thinks at very least you can put it off, or it won't be so bad when you get there, or maybe you can do things along the way that'll fix it up. I'm not entirely sure. I was a little bit confused by that logic in the film, but it struck me as a logic that I presume a lot of people would have, is that you get this strong sense that ultimate judgment is coming, that there are consequences, that there are bad things that we do and we can't make up for them ourselves.
But I don't have to deal with it now.
And I can sort of head it off at the pass. And there are so many different parts of the Bible that talk about the way God's set up our universe and that judgment is inherent in it. One of the books in the New Testament, Hebrews, talks about how ultimate judgment will come on a particular day. Jesus Christ will be the judge, and you will be on one side of that judgment, positive or negative. You can go to the Bible and really get, I think, a more concrete picture of what this judgment looks like. On Bloodfather, it gets a little bit murky, but I was, as you can hear, very struck, not just by how thinking and thought through this action film is, but the fact that it does deal with head-on consequences of action. I'm a massive fan of Bloodfather.
Wow.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Last week I convinced you to watch Free State of Jones. This week I think you've convinced me to watch Bloodfather, so I think I'll go and see that. Bloodfather stars Mel Gibson, Erin Moriarty, William H. Macy and Diego Luna. It's rated MA 15+ for strong violence and coarse language, so be careful.
It's pretty full frontal.
Yeah, but it's now showing in a movie house near you. Oh, and daughters, this might not be the kind of movie you want to share with your dad, even if dad is into it.
I dare say the daughters won't be.
No. Okay, well, still coming up on the show, we have some fantastic things to show you, not to mention the least of which is our favourite dad films to watch, courtesy of Adrian and Russ, our regulars, and the top 5 I Want This Guy to Be My Dad films. Hey kids, welcome back to The Big Picture. Clearly you've been allowed to stay up and listen tonight, so I hope you're having a wonderful Father's Day. Did you get your dad something that he wanted today for Father's Day? How do you know what he wanted? Did you ask him? Well, we asked. Not our own dads, but resident reviewers for The Vault, Russ Matthews and Adrian Drayton from Insights magazine and website. We asked them to tell us what they thought they would really, really like to watch as dads. Ben met with them earlier this week to find out how their children could have made their day. We kind of hope they did, by getting them the movie present they really, really want.
So Adrian, we'll start with you. What should your kids have got you today on DVD or Blu-ray that you would love them forever for when they hand it to you?
Oh, seriously, they should know me being a massive Star Wars nerd and the fact that I don't even...
I thought it was going to be Pretty in Pink, but no. Oh, yeah.
Really? No, not Pretty in Pink. Because I think I owned the VHS, the DVD, every probably possible conceivable format version of Star Wars, but I don't own it on Blu-ray.
What? But you have about 15 Star Wars t-shirts, I think.
That's correct, I do.
Okay. But you don't have the original trilogy on Blu-ray?
I don't have the original trilogy on Blu-ray, no.
You own a BB-8. You own a BB-8.
Yeah, I do. Seriously, you're revealing all these secrets about me.
They're not a secret. You're wearing those Star Wars t-shirts all the time. Yeah. But you're saying your life would be much, much more complete if you had the original trilogy on Blu-ray. Why? But you've already seen the movies.
It has 9 glorious hours of extra features. Wow. So I'd be into that in a massive way.
That would be a massive Father's Day around your house. Okay, Russ, what should your kids have got you on DVD or Blu-ray?
Well, I kind of cheated and I went and talked to my kids.
Russ, you cheated and talked
to my kids.
Father of the year.
I know, we shouldn't be encouraging you not to talk to your kids. I'm glad that you did. What did your kids say?
Father's Day. And so what I always ask for Father's Day is actually time with them. And so what I wanted to do is ask them, what film would you want to watch with Dad on Father's Day? Actually, each one of them. So
that's a pretty good question to ask, Father of the Year.
And so the kids, well, so two of my daughters said The Croods.
The Croods? That animated prehistoric film?
This is a really good father figure. It's one of the rare Nicolas Cage good films out there. And then The Iron Giant, which is a classic. I love that one too. But interestingly enough, my 11-year-old turns to me. She said, I'll give you a thoughtful one and a comedic one. And I'm like going, how old are you again?
Wow,
and
we should have your kids on the vault more often.
She goes, and so Up and then Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Oh, yeah.
Ah, oh, yeah, awesome.
And then so there's 3 daughters, but then my son, of course, wanting to make sure that he got time specifically with me, he goes, Fury. I want to see Fury, Dad.
That World War II movie from a couple of years ago, Brad Pitt.
It's all about the tanks, baby.
We've extended a big budget on the big picture, and we've sort of time travel possibly, and we're now the night of Father's Day. And so as you're listening back to this on the radio, because we've recorded this earlier, I'm getting myself confused now in where we are exactly in time. But by this stage of Father's Day, when you're actually listening to this, I'm hoping you guys have got the presents that you wanted. Adrian, is there another dream that you have?
Well,
dream
if it big. Actually existed, my youngest son, who's 12, said to me he would love to watch all the Marvel movies. So he would like, if there was a Marvel movie box set, he would like to watch all of them again with me. Like, we're big Marvel fans. I couldn't let Russ be the Father of the Year without dropping that, of course.
It sounds like you've given a really good suggestion to kids out there if they're looking for a Father's Day present for their dads. Just go and invent your own box set. Is that right?
Exactly. That's invent right. your own box set.
And even if they did, like, lame artwork at home and they drew the cardboard themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just get all the discs and put it together. What an excellent Father's Day gift.
What an excellent Father's Day gift indeed, Mark. The idea of getting your kids just to invent their own box set and hand that to you next year. If my 18-month-old daughter could do that at this stage, I would enforce that rule in my house.
I think my kids could do the box.
Thanks very much to Adrian and Russ. As regular listeners to the show would know, those guys do appear regularly, not just on this show, but on Insight's website. So go to insights.uca.org.au. Insight's huge supporter of The Big Picture. They regularly review all the latest releases like we do, but they give it a slightly different perspective because they're slightly different individuals.
And one of them's an American. And speaking of people who actually support the show, Eternity Digital is one of the places we'd like to draw your attention to, particularly the Gaming the Bible article. You see, thousands of kids are playing a new video game that's been designed to connect a new generation to God's story. It's called The Etherlight. So you might want to have a note of that. And Eternity spoke to the world builders of the game about how they constructed their steampunk existence. It's the cover story of the September edition of Eternity. It's out now in a church near you, or check it out online at eternitynews.com.au.
Mark, end of our Father's Day special, and we always end the show on a top 5 list. So what else would we do apart from some top 5 list to do with dad? So I thought, why not do a list of top 5 movie dads that I really wish were my own dad? But I keep having to wrap in to say, no disrespect to my own dad, because my own dad is great. I'm not looking to replace my dad.
Oh, come on, let's face it.
There are just some things about movie dads up on screen that often they remind me of my own dad.
Yes.
But there are just some other dads Well, let's go through the list and explain.
That's safe territory. Go with the remind me of my dad.
Five.
Here's a dad who bears no resemblance to my own dad. Marlin in Finding Nemo. Because Marlin is a fish.
There you go.
Finding Nemo and Finding Dory, the sequel, I should point out. Marlin, he's a widower trying to raise his own son in the big, wide waters of the world. And he's doing his best, but he's a little bit overprotective, isn't he, Marlin, at the start of Finding Nemo?
So you'd like
Nemo.
A paranoid, overprotective father.
No, I wouldn't like that part in my father, but I do like the protectiveness of where Marlin's heading and just trying to raise his son on his own, doing the best he can. Nemo gets lost in space, or at least lost in the entire oceans of Earth. And then what happens throughout the rest of Finding Nemo? His dad pursues him and just wants to find his son. Like, he's entirely gripped by finding his son. Isn't that a lovely thing to say about a dad? You would like to say that about anyone's dad. I could say that about mine.
You wish your dad was needy and orange.
I do not wish that, Mark. You're missing my point here.
Sorry.
That in the midst of a parental nightmare, this guy goes to such great lengths to find the son that he lost and loves. Might possibly ring bells about prodigal son parables and that kind of thing. I wouldn't dare to go that far. I would just like to uphold what Marlin does in terms of his devotion to his child.
Four.
And Mark, this dad is a little bit more like you. This is
Matt Damon again?
No, Lawrence Fishburne, the actor best known for The Matrix. He's often confused with you.
Sorry.
He was in a movie in the
Those people who haven't met me, I have a distinct tan.
Yeah, he was in a movie in the early 90s called Boys in the Hood, which also starred Cuba Gooding Jr. as Lawrence Fishburne's son. Now, one of the reasons I like this dad is because his character name is Furious Styles. Furious Styles. Now, my dad's name is Jeff McKechnie. That's a great name. But Furious Styles? Come on.
Who's your dad? I'm the son of Furious.
I'm the son of Styles. Furious Styles. I did want to give a commendation here to Martin Sheen in Wall Street because I think his dad character in that movie is very similar to what happens here.
Yeah.
So while your son is going off the rails or pursuing all kinds of things that you can see are not helpful for their future, in Wall Street, it was basically greed. In Boys in the Hood, Cuba Gooding Jr., his character is set in Los Angeles among gang members and basically is enveloped by a life of crime. And Furious Styles as the dad keeps telling his son to look beyond that, to escape this life, but he gives him actually like good advice and strong morals and believes in his son that he can actually turn things around by instilling strong values in him, and therefore you could transform a troubled community around you. That is a great thing in a dad. And Furious Styles says at one point, only a real man can raise his child, in reference to all these other guys that are running around having kids and showing no responsibility for it.
Yeah.
That's what Furious Styles has got to offer in Boys in the Hood.
One of the things rats, I missed that. I just want to say really quickly, I love the fact that he doesn't take any false assertions from his son either. Lawrence Fishburne is really great in that. Just says, don't be silly.
Yeah.
Listen up.
In a nutshell, don't be silly, but he says it in a way cooler way because he's Furious Styles. At number three, Roberto Benigni playing Guido in Life is Beautiful from 1997, which Roberto Benigni won an Academy Award for this. Talk about extreme situations. And even when you describe what this movie is, for people who haven't seen it, it just sounds like a movie that, A, someone wouldn't make, and then now that they have, you probably wouldn't watch because it just sounds like it's going to be a disaster. Set in a Nazi concentration camp, Guido is a Jewish Italian bookstore owner who creates this elaborate game for his young son to cloak the reality of what's going on around them. So, sadly, they've been separated from Guido's wife, but he keeps finding these very interesting ways to let her know she's in sort of a neighboring camp, let her know that they're okay. But most of the movie focuses on this dad's devotion. I keep coming back on this list, I think, to devotion, and also focusing a lot, I've realized as I look back on this list, that a lot of dads who don't have the mother around at the time, there's something that becomes a little bit more dominant about the father role when a mother isn't around to also share the parenting load. But Roberto Benigni's performance as Guido, I think, is quite remarkable. The film is quite remarkable. And Mark, I'm not sitting here trying to dive into this issue of should you lie to your kids or not, and whether what Guido did is right about you know, pretending that things are better than they are or not exactly as they are, but he is a dad trying to look out for his kid.
Yeah, somehow I feel like as I piece together your idea of the ideal father, it basically involves being a black American bookseller who's also a fish.
Yeah, let's build it up for me. Thanks for really listening to the cases I'm making for these dads. And again, I keep going back to my dad is great. I'm not sure. I'm looking to replace him with a fish, but I was very struck by the portrait of a man trying to shield his son and do what he can to help him survive. When you go and check out Life is Beautiful from 1997. Two. I'm a little bit surprised myself, Mark, that I didn't put this in at number one, but I haven't. Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird, performed by Gregory Peck, a Deep South lawyer who's defending an African-American man against what seems like a witch hunt by bigots. But this white man in Deep South America stands up, and Gregory Peck plays Atticus Finch beautifully with this sort of quiet resolve. He's got class and sincerity, and is a real restrained tenderness in him as well. And another great thing going for this movie in terms of celebrating it as a movie dad you want to watch, the film puts you on the side of his children, so effectively he is your dad. As he's going through the film, you see all these events, you kind of capture the respect and the wonder and even the subtle questioning of his kids as they witness the strength and possible weaknesses of their dad in this character of Atticus Finch. He is an amazing movie dad, but
one.
And here's the point on the list, Mark, where I draw a really long bow.
I've got to say you had me back with Atticus Finch. I'm with you on that. That's
had
great.
You back. Great. Thank you very much. I'm glad I...
So you're going to send me off again.
I'm glad a clownfish didn't convince you. Morgan Freeman as God in Bruce Almighty in 2003. Welcome to my number one movie dad. Now, the issue with this is that throughout Bruce Almighty, as Morgan Freeman is playing God, as a very charismatic, wise, funny, commanding, yet cuddly sort of version as God on Earth, aiming for humor and all that sort of thing, I don't think he actually refers to himself as Father God, which we often know is the way God is referred to in the Bible. But what it reminds me of is just how bigger and better and almightier God the Father actually is. So as cool as it would be to have Morgan Freeman as your dad, no disrespect to my own dad, and Morgan Freeman is a cool guy, right? But he's nothing in comparison to the one God and Father of all that we hear about in places like Ephesians 4, Acts 17, this Father of heaven and earth that you pray that hallowed be your name, and it's this massive Father. And he's the kind of father that you would want your own father on earth to be. And the amazing thing, as Morgan Freeman kind of demonstrates in Bruce Almighty, but God the Father does much more, is that this ultimate father of all that glory should go to is our father, individually, you, me, and everybody else in the scheme of the entire universe. And to remind us of that fact, well, here's Morgan Freeman.
Am I?
You can't kneel down in the middle of a highway and live to talk about it, son.
But why? Why now?
Bruce, you have the divine spark. You have the gift for bringing joy and laughter to the world. I know, I created you.
Quit bragging.
See, that's what I'm talking about. That's the spark.
What do you want me to do?
I want you to pray, son. Go ahead.
I want you to pray, son. That is great advice to end our Happy Father's Day special edition of The Big Picture on the Mark. That was this week. What's going on next week?
Well, next week's a bit of a serious note because it's 15 years on from September 11, and we're going to take a look at how Hollywood has re-examined this event.
And also, the Beatles are back in a new documentary.
Of course, and even bigger than the Beatles' return, Pete's Dragon. Okay.
We are going to be talking about the new version of Pete's Dragon. And next week, like this week, my own dad, Jeff, will still be my dad because I'm Ben McKechnie.
And I'm Mark Hadley. See you then.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.